You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions or anything to share? Yes, Michal.
I remember reading in I Am That, that like it's like a thing he keeps repeating, that if you want to wake up to the truth, then you need to really want to give up your personality. Like, this is the words he used. And he, like, he talks about it, like, as the turning point, like, as a really necessary condition to... And... I just thought, like, if you think it's true, that you need to want it, like, honestly, and what if you don't? And you don't even know that?
Mm-hmm. Could you hear? In the book I Am That by Nisargadatta Maharaj, he repeats a key teaching of his, which is that you have to really want to let go of, is that what he said?
Yeah,
give up your personality. This is how she remembers it. And only then, like, that's the sort of main thing that needs to be there for the turning, for the real breakthrough or turning point to happen.
Yeah, maybe not like giving up your personality, but mm-hmm. like to really want.
To
be free from. Like he say it in various ways.
Okay. So the question is not about what necessarily the giving up the personality part, but you have to really want to, whatever it is, freedom.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then the question is, of course, do I think it's true? What if I don't? What if someone doesn't really want that? Or they don't even know they don't want that?
If, like, it's a really necessary factor.
Right, if it's a really necessary factor. Yeah. So hear the question. Can you hear the question? Where it's ringing? Like, it sounds like the question hits you, at least partly in the alarm system, of, okay, maybe here is that one thing that someone, anyone, including myself, could be missing. Maybe I don't have that thing. And then all is lost. Or then what happens? That's part of what I hear in the question. So then, does that make sense? So then we can use that very situation of the question coming up with some alarm. But what if I don't really want? And what if that's the key? And I don't have it. Can you feel the alarm system? Okay. So, do you want to be free of the alarm system? Not even, I mean, you might want to also, but even if I, whoever I am, doesn't want, whatever that means, to be free of the alarm system, we can feel that the alarm system is uncomfortable. It doesn't feel like home, even though we live there. Is that true for you?
Yeah.
So the amoeba knows that. This is not home. It's not someone that has to want. It's built into us that what is not free doesn't fit us. And that is that can be felt.
But there is, like, he also talks about the desire to be, and that you need to, it sounds so radical, but that you need to also let go of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that also the desire to be is another thing that's in the way of freedom. Gautam also says this. Attachment to becoming, which is, I have a problem, I've got to get better first, then I can live. Attachment to being would be like, okay, now I've got it. And then attachment to non-being is also, according to Gautam, in the way of freedom.
I understood maybe I didn't understand. But the desire to be is wanting to keep on living.
Okay, also. In any state that I take as home when it isn't. So there's a way biologically that the biology is programmed that we're supposed to stay alive as long as we can. There's something in a human being that is beyond biology. That knows the biology is not our deep home. The biology is made to expire. It is made that way. So it's easy and hard. And then we could think, oh, so it's the survival instinct that I have to get rid of. That'll be the key. We can feel the survival system working, and we can feel that's not all, and that's not home. There's nothing wrong with it, thank goodness. There's also not always necessarily something right with it. The teachings like this help us know that human beings, including ourselves, so everybody like me, we get stuck, we stick onto things as if they're home. That happens. We stick on to trying to improve myself first, and then I can live. Becoming. We stick onto being. Whether that's a state of being that I think, okay, now I'm safe here, this will be it. Or whether I think of that as this lifespan. Or let me get away from all of that and non-being, that'll be my savior. Something that doesn't want to be saved, even though it's unsafe. That's in a human being. And what helps that to come out fruitfully? A simple kind of interest in the living quality. And it can so easily get distracted by where it's easy to feel aliveness in something dramatic or in nothing. And we can feel that we're seeking refuge, not freedom, in those moments where we stick. And that happens, that's natural, but it's not freedom. And it's not all that we are. There's also something more slippery that we don't have to have. We don't have to get it, I mean. It's not something that we lack. Hearing the instructions and techniques and teachings, sometimes it's like if you're learning a dance and there's mirrors in the studio and you're watching yourself in the mirror and you think you got it. And then you try to do it without the mirror, without looking. Or when we're singing with the paper, how's the singing when you're looking at the words and then the lights got turned off. And a shift from what might help us feel our way towards the deeply natural. And then shifting from what helped me towards the deeply natural into the deeply natural. And the example of how a teaching can trigger the alarm system, that, I don't have it, gotta hurry up. And it's working against practicing connection. But that happens all the time, of course, not only. But then it's easy to feel, oh, this is the alarm system. It doesn't mean this is a bad teaching. But how, in what way could that teaching find its way in to feed the roots of the tree? To water the roots of the tree. So I had a question here that someone wrote that I talk about direct experience and that other teachers have suggested other ways like cleaning mental defilement. So that means ways that the mind, the way I talk about it is the ways that the mind is programmed and addicted as one other option, and also understanding the three characteristics, which is a Buddhist teaching. So, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, anicca, so the changing, and anatta, that it's not a separate self that we are, that we're not a separate bag. And then the person asks, are these the same? So the easy answer is yes, it's the same. But if we think about, in general practice, what might be fruitful, direct experience helps us be in touch with whatever you want to call the characteristics of the way things happen. That's what Gotam is talking about. When he says characteristics of existence, he meant the characteristics of the cause and effect level. We're vulnerable, we're continually mutually interacting. There's so many meetings and happenings. And being in touch with that, why is that helpful? As we start to get the hang of how to let those meetings be happenings. Instead of, I always feel like I'm behind, I'm always not quite here. And how to be with when we're, let's say, I feel my knee or I feel the out-breath. And part of me is alarmed because I'm practicing meditation and it's for freedom. And I don't have freedom. And they do, or whatever. And so then I approach my knee experience or my out-breath experience as something that means too much to me. And I want it to really feed me. But the way that I grab it is untrue. The way I experience it as my version of my knee my mental version of my knee instead of the actual experience, which is a bunch of different little sensations that don't necessarily make the picture I want them to make. They're not quite as solid as I planned on. They didn't save me. So the direct experience is clearly a good place for being in touch with the characteristics of existence, how things work, how it goes, what's happening. The dukkha is unsatisfactoriness is our usual approach to life, our habitual programmed approach to life. That I don't have, I've got to get, and then I can be okay and live. And meanwhile, I don't listen to that movement towards freedom. Or of freedom. I also find that direct experience is one good way to allow our system to flush, to let go of what's extra. So defilement is like dirty. So the dirty mind, a good way of flushing is being in direct experience. And another kind of mode of practice, so this morning we did a guided meditation that was not just being with how is the direct experience already right now in my conscious experience. So direct experience is how is it now, and I interfere as little as I can and receive. Another kind of side of practice is where we interfere. We don't just say, there's lots of fear here, 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 there's lots of fear here. And also, Gautam didn't do that, and he recommended to his students, if they knew they were going into a scary situation, sleeping in a cave where there might be tigers and robbers and whatever, they believed in ghosts. Practice metta. You know your mind is going to go in a programmed direction that is going to torture you. Even if there's no danger, you're going to imagine there is. You're going to almost experience that there is. And if there is danger, you'll be useless in getting away or protecting yourself because you'd be so caught by fear. So let's notice this programming, which is partly biological and partly cultural, personal, like many kinds of programming together. And understanding that the nature of mind as free, in the free mind, love comes up. So let's do something that helps lean the mind in the direction of its nature, which would be space where love comes through, where love moves. Let's try to do love. And then the mind catches on, like, oh, I have permission to be free. I wanted to mention a few things that can help. Our permission for freedom to take over. I'm just keeping in mind a few questions, but I think they've come in. I mentioned, I think it was the first or second evening, about the grandmother heart. That Dogen saw was missing in one of his students. So So we can feel that when we practice in a way that's sticking to safety instead of freedom, where there's avoidance of the juiciness of life, avoidance of leaving space to let love move. We can all understand why or how it happens that there's avoidance of leaving space to let love move. Because even if our longing and our whole life is all about finding that love, or whatever you'd like to call it, that freedom or whatever word, when we start to realize what's in my hands to grow my receptors to notice that there's freedom here, or there's love here, there's being held here, as soon as we know, we touch it and realize we're touching it, we're gone. Like a sea anemone, so delicate and feeling, and then and then something still comes back out. And I talked about grandmother heart as where, in a way, we could say so simply, practice in the service of freedom rather than safety. Robert Fripp talked about craft in the service of music. It's the same. So one quality, human quality, that helps ground us in craft in the service of music, meditation in the service of leaving space for love to move, having permission for freedom to happen. So the first one is, it's called vichar in Sanskrit, but one of my teachers translated it as wonder, and I really like that. One teacher talks about freedom from our own thinking. We're talking here about freedom from our own programming, but if we especially think about freedom from our own thinking, sometimes we feel confused because we don't understand our experience. And then someone might give us an explanation. Oh, this is what's happening. And we relax and we feel good and we can go into our practice. Whether that description is true or not, we don't care. We just want to get some space from our own thinking. That I'm supposed to be able to understand this and I don't. And that's a problem. And we need to be aware of this, how easily we lose our honesty. So many things are happening that we don't understand and that don't ask to be understood. What is asking to understand and unraveling? What is the kind of life movement towards precisely experiencing that might be in there? And what is that control freak that's wanting to ignore that the alarm system is moving me and not love? Sorry. Do I rewind anything?
No, just.
So we've talked a bit about wonder, where we can notice that we've gotten into a small mind. We're either focused on one problem or on the lack of something, the too much or the problem of something. And the amoeba, something in us, starts to feel, this is very small, this is very narrow. It doesn't say that, but it can feel. And then life helps by the bird song, or you accidentally spill your water. There's a world, not just me and my problem. And of course, spilling my water might be a proof of my problem, according to that even more narrow mind. But there's also the wonder in how, however narrow the mind gets, there's still the whole world. It's never true. And the amoeba loves wonder. The whole world. Ununderstandable. Can feel how that allows things to move differently. A second quality I would call today ordinariness. So in a way we can feel how the alarm system pushes us to try to get special so that then I have proof to myself that I can relax, that I'm okay, that now I can start living. And I'm proving to myself, life didn't ask me to prove that. So this quest for specialness we can feel as one arm of the alarm system. The fact of ordinariness, that no matter what happens, no matter what happens, has already happened in some way. So wonder is like, wow, it's never happened exactly this way. And it keeps, things keep happening. And ordinariness is letting things be free from this quest for specialness. And that's not dry. I think we're afraid if we let go of making things special, that kind of, that part of our, someone called it a buzz today, like a kind of underneath. It goes towards making it sound exciting to me so that I'm reassured that we're on the way to specialness. We're engaged with the bully again and again in this way. We're afraid that we won't have any juice if it's not special. But again, we've lost track of the honesty. In the specialness is drying. It's wearing us out. It's too active. It's burning us out. And in the ordinariness, we are given juice. The word is santusht in Sanskrit. It's usually translated as contentment. So a feeling of not needing things to be different. And again, we can think that it's dry, but the experience is wet. And not only wet, but wet in a way that gets into the soil to feed the roots. The third is practice, or craft. And I'd love to suggest that we feel that practice isn't holding back because it's not real, I'm only practicing. But that practicing is getting in tune with how there are continual happenings and leaps and shifts and turning points. So the ordinariness and the wonder both help that. We can actually stay with an ongoing opening or ongoing turning point that keeps being brought forth. We have the juice from santusht. We have the openness from vichar. So there's space for the juice to get where it needs to go. And practice, rather than thinking of me working the machine just the right way, making it work the right way. Practice as allowing the juice and the openness. It lets the water get to the roots. So it's a feeling of the juice of life filling, and it's intense and it's erotic. It's scary, it's beyond what we think we can handle or what we think we are in the meditation hall. Maybe there's a word in Sanskrit that would be snigdha, I think. Oily love. For us, if we can call it eros, but like spiritual eros or big eros. Grandmother heart. And we start to feel a reconfiguration. Realignment, rearrangement. Or a deconfiguration is what it really is. We're configured, so like a computer gets configured, we're expecting programming, we're expecting things to happen like a computer. Install the program and then things should follow. And so we expect practice to be a program that we install and then things happen accordingly. And sometimes that works, unfortunately. Unfortunately, people sometimes are successful at meditation as another program. In an emergency, that's fine. If there's a strong addiction that's maybe life-threatening or whatever, like, then some kind of programming that's more like meditation, that's fine. Temporarily. But practice is the real play. It's not the rehearsal. And there's the chemistry of the real play, not the rehearsal. And we find that the turning points are ordinary and wondrous. The leaps and shifts and turning points have no specialness and can't be understood. What a wonder. E ma ho, in Tibetan. They'll often start a text, E ma ho. How wondrous. This is getting the hang of anicca, so the changing nature of things. Letting the changing nature of things be fruitful, that's practice. Letting that turning point open to that turning point, to that turning point. Leap, leap, leap. Ordinary, wondrous. And the way it happens is not happy, happier, happiest. And so this is the deconfiguration. When we're looking for practice to save us, then we expect that the program of meditation is going to go happy, happier, happiest, and then beyond happiest, and etc. The fastest, most direct path to the happiest of happiest, beyond happiness. And that's why we keep adding, because it's like, that's not quite enough. Got to get farther away from life. Happier than that. It's got to be. If only I could get rid of this person. If only I could want to get rid of this personality, then the program could run properly. So we're trying to get out of the way of the program, and it's the program that's in the way of life. So when we start to realize that the turning points will go from difficult to pleasant to difficult to pleasant to difficult to pleasant. And in between, many times boring, nothing's happening, I think. But it is, probably, possibly. And that doesn't mean I'm doing well, I'm doing bad, I'm doing well, I'm doing bad. The grandmother heart accommodates that. That it's a true, juicy, simple turning point to be honestly in touch with, let's say, sadness. And that fruitfully leads to find something, the origin of the sadness, maybe not psychologically, maybe now, or that it wasn't sadness. But that was an important step to feel, oh, this is, let me be with this sadness, here's this sadness. A direct experience and a leaning away from the programming, both kinds of practice. So many times people will say, I'm so confused. I don't understand what's going on. And it's because we want it to fit our understanding, which is that it should be happy, happy, or happiest. And if it isn't, I'm wrong, or the practice is wrong, or something is wrong. Does that make sense? The fourth quality that can be helpful, they're called the doorkeepers of liberation. The doorkeepers of liberation. And it's a text that invites us to eat the doorkeepers of liberation. Eat and digest. Vichar, wonder. Ordinariness that's juicy, santushta. Practice that's not a rehearsal. And they say, eat one, even one of those, eat it. Like, really make it your own. Don't only nibble with the thinking. Put it in and see what happens. So the fourth quality, or doorkeeper, we could call being big. That there is big mind, even when there's small mind. And that we can have the direct experience of that, and we can lean into that, both. The word is satsang, which is with truth. And we could call it meeting truth. Or letting what's true be met or meet. And it's also in the amoeba. Something in us, when we find ourselves setting ourselves up for failure, like making up in the mind, like, okay, if I get to the end of this retreat, then I win. Or if I realize I need to go home, then I win, or I lose, or whatever. Like, and we can hear ourselves going already back and forth, but maybe I'm being too hard on myself if I would stay, or maybe I'm being too easy on myself if I would go, or maybe I'm escaping if I go, or maybe I'm escaping if I stay. And we've already lost. By making that king. Instead of asking the grandmother. But we can sometimes just hear or feel something's not quite right in this setup in my mind about what's right and wrong. Is that really the key to freedom? And how do I know if I have it or if I don't have it? And what if I don't have it? And what if I don't have it and I don't know I don't have it? And something in you hears, like, I believe this and I don't believe this. But I think I'm supposed to believe this, because it's Nisargadatta. It's I am that. Yes. What do I mean asking the grandmother?
Is this right?
I don't even think in asking the grandmother we need to say anything, because she's listening. It's like big mind. She's not listening like Big Brother. But she can hear that we also hear that something's not quite right in is it right or wrong? That that's a setup that I've already lost as soon as I'm into it. Is it right or wrong? And I'm not feeling that this is the alarm system talking and shoving me around. And the alarm system is also awesome. It's a wonderful thing. In those rare times that we need it. And if we could let it rest so that when we need it, it can come forth. The grandmother heart is like listening to you, with you, and hearing there's big mind and small mind. Hearing your undared doubt in the way that the mind is trapping itself. So asking grandmother heart or asking the grandmother is not necessarily one particular thing. But grandmother heart is craft in the service of space so love can move, you can say. And it's wide in that knowing that we've all done everything, that things happen, that we wouldn't plan or wish for good and bad. And that doesn't touch the place that cares anyway, that isn't alarmed. So it's being that deep that there's the alarm system and that's not all. And there's room and care happens. And care is willing to go into craft, not just flashy care, being seen that I care, but quietly by the fire. With what there is, something for the baby or whatever. Someone had asked a question about forgive and forget. I can't go fully into the response now, unfortunately, but the question about grandmother heart and what is asking the grandmother. So grandmother heart also could be where we can feel that hurt has happened and how that has made impressions on us and been part of the programming, and how easily we could then react, programmed. And so it's not forgiveness as some like holy thing, but as a practical thing, that it's not necessary to react from the hurt in a way that will hurt. that doesn't work. But it's not saying hurt didn't happen, or it doesn't matter, or I don't care. I care that much that I go deeply somewhere that's not a program, not a reactivity, that has room for wonder and ordinariness and craft that is each time a leap. And then especially being big, being in the grandmother heart, sometimes with the help of others, the atmosphere together helps us remember, ah, that small mind, that's why that didn't quite fit. Forgetting in the sense of it's not the first thing on the mind, and not forgetting in the sense of that happened. And there can be a lot to learn from how those things happen and how that happened. And also a quietness that that happens. There's no way out. That happens. But there is a way of freedom. There's a way of freedom from suffering. Not freedom from pain, freedom from suffering. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the momentum of freeing for all, including ourselves.